Great ball opportunity here. It's in. It's Patrick McElhinney.
I'm feeling good.
Here's Hooven. And Hooven gets it.
I'm delighted to be back, yes.
This is tough.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Hello there, welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast, a cast of thousands in studio today. We've James O'Toole, a regular on the podcast, Paul Toot, who has just recently retired as a referee, Anthony Pine from RT Sport Online, Keith Tracy, former Irish international, and who knows, maybe again, and Alan Cawley. How do we bill you, Alan?
You tell me, Adrian, you tell me.
Yeah, with big zeros on the check, I suppose, yeah. It's a big week, of course, in football. Ireland playing New Zealand. That really is the precursor, of course, to the big one. Next Monday night, Ireland taking on Denmark in that make-or-break European Championship qualifier. Alan, I might start with you. Just as we record this, we're unsure as to Aaron Connolly's situation. But leaving that aside, in terms of Thursday and New Zealand, and with the Denmark game in mind, what do you think Mick McCarthy will be hoping to get out of Thursday's game?
It'll be interesting to see, because I'm nearly looking at it now and he's probably thinking it might be a bit of a distraction, obviously, with the game, because all eyes is on next week. And I know he's brought in, obviously, a couple of the younger lads, so I've no doubt he'll play them and he'll have to play them. But sometimes I think going into games like this that, because all the focus is on the Denmark game, I suppose the question mark around it is, does he go with a full strength team gearing up for Denmark? But then you run the risk of obviously maybe losing out if someone got injured, or there's always that fear factor. So it's a tough one. I'd say if Mick had to know how the group was going to pan out, I'd say he could have done without this friendly, to be honest with you, and probably would have been looking forward to just maybe this being a one-off game and all eyes just focusing on that. So the fact that he's brought in the young lads, I think he has to play them. There's a bit of a clamour to see some of the young lads as well, but I think Mick is only concerned about next Monday night, to be honest.
Well, he has said he'll play Jack Byrne and Troy Parrott. I guess it depends at what stage from the outset, or maybe introduce them as subs. Keith, in terms of Mick McCarthy and the point that Alan makes, and Denmark, with Denmark in mind, would you go with a strong 11 just to iron out any kind of kinks before the big game on Monday night, just to maybe even try out set piece routines or whatever? Or what's the thinking at international level when it comes to?
I'd be the complete opposite to that. I would play everybody who's not going to play on Monday against Denmark, to be honest with you, because I don't think we have the players. If, you know, there was a question over Randolph, he looks like he's going to be all right, but if he comes in and tweaks something again, we're going to a second choice goalkeeper, and then, you know, the defence is makeshift anyway. The midfield is not great, and if you take another two or three players out of that team that we have, our settled 11, then we're really, really struggling. So I'd just try and get through the New Zealand game and don't get any injuries. That'd be the main thing. Wouldn't even bother with the result, to be honest.
Yeah. You, James, what do you reckon?
I think the exact same as the lads are saying. I think a lot of the young lads are playing. Now, the question mark is, will the young lads still be in the squad? Because Stephen Kenny's just dropped five fellas have just come out of his squad. So will Stephen Quinney now be putting the pressure on Mick to bring Troy back into the squad and Albert Fahey back into his squad more than play for the international in a friendly game in the Aviva? I think that might be where pressure comes, whether he plays them or not. I think he's right. You can't afford the injuries on a friendly, just a basic friendly.
I suppose Parrott went in and scored two goals and all
he's
the hype then. No, I don't think he's going to play, but people will want him kind of somewhere involved then again, you know, if he was to really impress. So he'll be in. Yeah, I think I'd be more along the lines, as I said, with Keith, and because we have the injury concerns over. I know Whelan obviously is getting on, but he's probably been our best player in the last two games. Randolph as well is brilliant goalkeeper, played. I know they only drew at the weekend, but he played really well by all accounts for Middlesbrough's first game back. So we just can't afford to have injuries. But if Parrott was to come in and, like, you know,
what a clamour that'd be then.
Well, there you go. Like, you know.
Paul, we'll come on to your career in due course, but you're a very keen Republic of Ireland football fan. You've travelled to support the team. Are you excited about Denmark next week?
I am, yeah.
Or nervous?
No, I'm nervous. I think my heart says we can win, my head says probably won't. I think it's a strange one. I think it's one of those games, to be honest. Ireland, we always seem to do better when a draw doesn't suit us, and obviously a draw doesn't suit us on Monday. We have to go all out, and I think after what Kasper Schmeichel said, I think Mick McCarthy will be getting stuck into the player's head that there's an element of big-headedness about the Danish, and they feel they'll turn us over easy enough. I feel it'll be a good atmosphere there from the start. I think we have to play on that. It's one of those nights. I think we have to let them know we're there, get stuck in from the start, get the atmosphere going. And who knows, I'd be worried if we score early. It's a bit crazy, but if we score early, I think we always tend to, when we score early, we tend to go defensive and it brings teams on. And that's been our downfall at times. But I think the elements, as I say, it's a strange one. It may sound funny, but I think that the fact that we draw won't do us. I think we have to go out and get the win. Might suit us. And hopefully next Monday night we can we might have a smile on our faces.
It's a terrific prize at stake, isn't it, Anthony?
Yeah, well, it's like a cup final. I mean, I think I agree with what Alan was saying. I think the New Zealand game in Mick McCarthy's mind is probably just an inconvenience. I think there's been some clever PR around the game in terms of he's going to play Parrott, he's going to play Lee O'Connor, Jack Bourne, because you know, you want to give people a reason to actually watch the game. I don't know what sort of crowd we'll get Thursday, probably not great. But I think it's very unlikely that anybody's going to do anything on Thursday night to change Mick McCarthy's plans for Monday. I think he knows his team, barring injuries. Possibly James McLean could be in trouble because if McGoldrick leads the line, he might play Connolly on the left, maybe. But I think Thursday's just a chance to play, give these young lads a run out. You know, it's good PR, good buzz around the fact that the likes of Parrott, Lee O'Connor and Jack Bourne are playing. But really, I think what's going to be on his mind straight away, even now, is Denmark. It has to be. It's just such a huge game.
Alan Paul said he's a little bit apprehensive about next Monday. This distance out from it, what's your gut feeling on it?
Yeah, well, I suppose I'm basing my view on the game next Monday on what we've watched already. And you would have to have a concern over the last two or three games, particularly the Georgia one, you know. We were obviously very, very poor. And like you can't just switch it on. There has to be some sort of pattern built up in terms of form and how you're playing. And the games have been very disappointing. And I suppose when you think back of Martin O'Neill's reign and how kind of toxic it became at the end, has there really been much difference in terms of the football? But I wouldn't blame Mick McCarthy too much on that in regards. He's only here for a short term, so I don't think Mick McCarthy cares how we play. He's more or less said it himself. He was never going to come in and change a philosophy or change kind of the brand of football that we're most known to play. All he's concerned about is qualifying. And to be fair to him, at the start, when the group was kind of formed at the start of the campaign, if you had to say to Mick, it'll come down to the last game in the Aviva with a chance to play Denmark and win and you go through, I'd say he would have snapped your hand off before playing the seven previous games. So in that regard, it's a job probably well done, regardless of the performances. But like Paul said, I'd be just a little bit worried purely based on how we've played recently. We've been very, very poor.
Yeah, that is the worry, isn't it, Keith? Because at the Aviva, in the new look Aviva, Ireland really, when it comes to the big games, haven't managed to get over the line. I mean, Germany a few years ago was an exception, but Denmark coming to town, they give us a bit of a hiding. We scored early, actually, in that game. Of course, Shane Duffy scored early, but generally on the big nights at the Aviva, we haven't managed to do it when it really matters.
Yeah, well, I can analyse Ireland till the cows come home, but the main problem is there's not enough goals in the team. You're looking at, I have the little league in front of me here, and Georgia have scored more goals than us in this group. You know, the European powerhouse that is Georgia. So, you know, we're not exactly brilliant, but we have a chance. We're solid at the back. We've only conceded four. So if we can keep the Danes out, like Paul said, I think we might nick a set piece, something like that, in the nine hours of the game and really, really upset them. But if Denmark get into that flow, you know, you really do worry for us.
Yeah. Is it just a lack of creativity right throughout the pitch?
It's everywhere. There's a lack of talent everywhere. I think, you know, the spine of the team, like I said, Wheelow's been a great servant for him. He's been brilliant. But, you know, at that age, there's going to be question marks when he's playing in the Irish midfield. All the names, there's question marks over all of them. There's not a lot that you can say, yeah, he's proven, he's done it. Other than Duffy, you know, at international level, there's not a lot you look at and think, yeah, he's one that's going to give us an 8 out of 10 week in, week out, or, you know, month in, month out for the internationals. But I just don't see anybody who fills me with confidence in the team. And like I say, if Denmark get into that flow, I really do worry for us.
I tend to find when the mood is downbeat, I look to James O'Toole to give me positivity. Come on, James. Lift the mood of a nation here, please.
Pass. Now, I think, do you know what? As Anthony said, this is a cup final. I think that might be what we get through to the people. And as Paul mentioned, if the atmosphere in the ground builds from early and it starts building straight off, this could well end up being, if Denmark get into their flow, the only way to get it out is a massive James McLean tackle. The whole crowd will go absolutely mental if that happens. And then you can build from just something as simple as that. I think keep it tight, keep it nil all, or don't let them score for the first half at least, and then assess where we are and then go for it. I think we can't, like, it's a cup final. Anybody, you can go either way here. Now, unfortunately,
I'm feeling more positive now.
The last time it was this cup final, we unfortunately left five in, but we just keep on going.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so. I think Ericsson was the catalyst to that.
No, but more so from our point of view, I think, as Keith said, defensively, we're very, very good. Like, you go through the back four there, like, Duffy's obviously playing. I know he's been in and out to start, but playing, he's been an ever-present for us, and he's become a bit of a kind of an iconic figure at the back there. Egan's having a great season. Enda Stevens having a great season. The goalkeeper, I'm very impressed with. I think he hasn't put a foot wrong since he's got the number one jersey. So I think, and like all good teams, not suggesting we're a good team, but like all teams, I suppose, that do well, you have to build from the back. And I think that's one area where we are very strong. If you're looking for any positives, Adrian, I suppose, to take into it, I can't see Denmark carving us open or really opening us up too much. But then I suppose, as Keith says, on the other hand, is how we're going to score a goal, and probably down to a set piece or something like that. But I think going into this game, I can't see us losing 2 or 3 or anything like that. It's only going to be the odd goal in this game.
I think they have to actually just believe they can do it. Like, when the major disappointment about the game in Georgia was there was such a lack of conviction. They didn't really, like, it started poorly in the first 5 minutes, and it just, you could see the mentality seemed to be, we'll get out here with a point. And McCarthy was happy with the point, but they had the chance to take control of the group that day. They didn't take it. As Paul says, you sort of look at Ireland and you think, God, maybe the worst thing that could happen is if they score in the first 5 minutes, because they don't really seem to know where to stick or twist. So they have to go in believing that they can beat Denmark, which Ireland can. I think Ireland can do it.
Especially given the form of Christian Eriksen in the Premier League. But of course, tempting fate in saying that now. Well,
I think having McGoldrick back is a big, big plus, because the guys we brought in, without being too hard on them, Scott Hogan didn't really do it. Callum Robinson's a bit hit and miss. Obviously, we hope for great things from Aaron Connolly, and I think he could work off McGoldrick off not-ons and that. You know, Connolly seems to have great pace. So looking at him the weekend, McGoldrick, he was excellent. So I think he's a big plus. I think that will add to the team. Last two games, obviously, he was missing, so we were pretty poor up front. Fair enough, the crosses from, I think James McLean's crosses have to improve. A lot of things have to go away, but they can go away, and I think it's all about the mentality, having positive mentality, and not being afraid of them, and hopefully it goes.
You've travelled a fair bit following the Republic of Ireland.
I have, yeah.
Since when?
Since I was 12, which is, 40 years ago? Yeah, too long.
Home and away?
Home and away, yeah, yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
it's so just one of those things. You've done all the big trips,
I've done all the big trips, yeah, yeah. And done all the high stools and all the big trips as well along the way.
Yeah, fortunately, a League One rep.
How did that start with your dad or someone bringing
that
up?
Yeah, just my dad brought me to, it brought me to Paris when I was 12, and then I just sort of kept it going. And I bring my lads now, so it's costing me that as well. But it's, I enjoy the crack around it, and
So you go to all the away games and all the World Cups, games, the Euros and France.
And it's generally the same. There's younger guys come on every, but there's a fair hardcore of guys have been going the last 20, 30 years, So.
Well, there sure is.
There is indeed.
Yeah. And I guess League of Ireland fans, when they see you, inevitably have something to say.
Of course, you get a bit of banter in that, but just that's, in one ear, out in the other, and have a chat and, no problems really. I've never had anything nasty happening anywhere, anything like that,
You've just retired as a referee, and how hard is it? I know you're going to referee at Leinster Senior League level, but to leave League of Ireland level behind, how difficult is that?
Yeah, it'll be difficult, all right. I've great memories, enjoyed all my time, met great people. People change. Sometimes when they go on the pitch, they can be a bit...
What is he looking at me for?
I was just going to say, if this was television...
he's not looking at me?
I apologise.
No, Alan was quiet. Keith was a bit mouthy now. And he knew how to leave the leg in. But in fairness, all these guys change when they go over to the far side of the white line. They're obvious nice guys. I've never done anything again, never been nasty. Take guys as you meet them, and I will miss it because there's great characters. I think we're all in it for the same thing, trying to promote football, professional football in the country. There's enough knockers out there. We have certainly seen a great progression in professional football in Ireland in the last, I'd say, 12 years. We see it in Europe. Okay, maybe it'd be nice if we saw it more consistently when the League of Ireland teams play in Europe, but we have seen great progression with obviously Dundalk and maybe even Rovers this year, and Pats have done well and Cork have done well. But there's no reason why we shouldn't be, though, in Europe in competition with the likes of Latvia and Lithuania and these other countries, and well, Hungary, and that they're getting teams further than we are. So that's really the real barometer. But yeah, I've enjoyed League of Ireland football, met great people. And,
How did you get into it in the first place?
I started referees course. I was playing football. I played fairly well. I played at a fairly decent level. Played for Bohemian second team, and I played for James's Gate, which is in the League of Ireland. And then I had knee injuries, and I actually started a bit late. It was about 25. And I says, I was about a year and a half out of the game, and I was probably letting myself go a bit with the lads. And I said, no, I have to watch it here. So I didn't really fancy coaching. So I said, I'd give a referee course a go. And I went into Kevin Street, did a week's course. Did about 4 years refereeing junior football, then got the chance to come up into the League of Ireland and haven't looked back since. I did a few, did assistant referee or linos, as they used to call them then, and then moved into the middle and really haven't looked back since.
I guess you need a thick skin, though, when it comes to being a referee, because especially at League of Ireland grounds where it can be quiet at times. The amount of abuse that is hurled at a referee must be hard to take at times.
Well, probably you'd hear it more in a League of Ireland ground than you would in a big ground like the Aviva or somewhere, I suppose. But some of it can be funny in one ear, out the other. Have a bit of banter with players. I always had banter with players. I think that was it. That was a good thing to have. Just let it in one ear, out the other, really, and don't take it too. Don't let it affect you.
So would you talk to the players as the game's
unfolding? I would. I always have. Yeah, I think that's maybe. I think Alan will agree. I see him nodding his head there. It's probably going out of the game a little bit, banter between players and referees, players and managers, and coaches even. I think they're trying to UEFA level, and it's funny because Colina was one of the main heads of refereeing, and he used his personality in matches, and now they don't seem to want referees to use personality or have as much banter or communication. They just want referees really to give decisions here, decisions there, and just move on. So I think that's one thing maybe that's a bit disappointed with in refereeing.
In my experiences, yeah, and I'm not just saying this because Paul is here, but the two best referees I came across in our league was Alan Kelly and Paul. And the reason being was because, just as you said, they'd actually speak to you. And even though a decision might go against you and you remonstrate or whatever and you say, Paul, what's going on? He'd try and explain to a point. Like, obviously, he can't explain every decision, but he might say, look, Alan, he pushed him in the back, he clipped him, whatever. And he could tend to get on with it. The most frustrating thing for a player, I'm sure Keith would agree, is when they kind of turn their back to you and almost kind of, it's almost an insult to you, really, and it just gets your back up even more. So I think that's probably been a key. It's probably been over the years for you, Paul. It's probably, as you say, the relationship side of things, because it's like everything in life. If you have relationships with people, you're going to get on far better than with them than if you're not. So he'll be sorely lost, because going back to even about you were saying there, Adrian, did he get much stick going away and all? I'd say he's probably one of the most likeable refs that we've had, and Paul seems to have a good relationship with many, and he will definitely be a loss to the league, because he's been a great referee over the years.
Okay. It's a good motto, I always say, is to get respect, you have to give respect, you know. So, and I've always tried to do that. Probably sometimes when a player is looking for something, you can do a bit of bluffing with him as well, you know what I mean? But a nice bluffing sort of thing. If you make a mistake, just say you make a mistake. All right, you know, that's the best way.
Would it be something, Paul, that you'd recommend for younger people now? Because there was a piece in the paper over the weekend, Emmett Malone. I actually, you might not believe this, but when I finished playing as well, and something like yourself, I was trying to figure out what I'm going to do and this, that, and the other, to try and fill the void.
Yeah.
My dad was on to me about doing a referees course, so I went and did it was a fast track one over a weekend. John Ferry was doing it. Got the qualifications, went down to a game. I'll never forget this. This is the truth, Adrian, right? Went down to a game. I won't name where it was, but went to a game, an over 35s match, because it says to me, look, we'll kind of break in easier or whatever and start off at that level. So went down to an over 35s match. The people couldn't have been any nicer when I arrived to the pitch, right? On a Saturday afternoon. This is the truth, right? Couldn't have been any nicer.
An hour and a half later, I don't think they were.
Welcomed me in, right? Welcome me in, these two fellas. I'll never forget it. They turned out to be the captains, right? So that was grand. Says, come on, lads. Lovely sunny afternoon. Come on, we have the game now. So started the match anyway. And one team was hammering another team. I'd say 6 minutes into the match, these two fellas who couldn't have been any nicer welcoming me into the ground were rolling around in the headlock on the floor, right? And it must have been about 40. And I said, lads, what's going on? Like, it's just a kick around, a game of ball. But there was absolute carnage. Like, and the serious side of it is, if you're a young fella now trying to get into the game, the abuse you're hearing on the sidelines, because without referees, there'd be no games for anyone. And I'd say it must be a major turn-off for young people to try and get involved in it now.
It is, yeah. I read Emmett Malone's article, very well put together. He's actually, you know, he's refereeing himself. The first probably year or 18 months after a referee does a call, especially young referees, that's when you'll really either keep them, the retention is very low. Yeah, there's serious verbal abuse, there's been physical abuse. So it is really difficult. You want to be thick-skinned, especially the younger guys. I think they're trying to put the younger guys into the underage football for a few years first, which is a good idea, because before this they were sending them straight into a, as you say, an over 34s or a Division 3 or Division 4 match, where lads are probably after being on the lash the night before, not really interested in the football and just want to get one over on the other team. So the retention is really difficult at the moment to try and keep them in the game.
I remember a couple of years ago, myself and Johnny Mack did a feature on referees.
Remember that? Yeah.
Republic, and we did the actual course, the FA course down in Abbottstown. And it was good crack. It was a load of the footballers were all invited along by the PFAI to look and see as an option the future. And one of the referees, whose name escapes me now, came out with the best saying on the whole weekend. And he said, if you can keep your calm while all those around you are losing yours, theirs, you've just missed the worst tackle of the match. And that was just the theme of the whole weekend, was like, listen, it's going to happen. If you go out there, you're going to miss stuff and you're going to get abused. But if you got, as you said, the thick skin to get over it.
Well, that's the thing I think about refereeing, because people expect you to get every decision right, naturally so.
Yeah.
And all the more so now, given that there's so much technology in the game.
Well, I think, as I say, with the game has refereeing in Ireland has progressed. I mean, when I started, and
has it changed markedly in the last few years? Even
well, I think the image of referees, League of Ireland referees, I mean, they're all pretty lean. There's definitely no issues with fitness with them, or there shouldn't be. I think it's improved. I think they were obviously politically we don't fit in too well with UEFA, because it seems to be other smaller countries seem to be getting bigger games. But some of our guys, they're doing pretty well. Rob Harvey and Rob Hennessy. Rob Hennessy's come on really well. Paul McLaughlin, Neil Doyle, they're getting reasonably good games in Europe. I think there's good hopes for refereeing within Ireland, I would say. And of course, Michelle. Yeah, Michelle, super year for her. Actually, they're on tonight in Dundalk and Linfield. There's an all-female team, so best luck to them tonight. Could be a quite feisty match, actually, I would say. You know, interesting.
Anything to throw at Paul?
Well, like, because I
imagine Anthony on the sidelines, you're one to throw a bit of abuse at times.
Well, no, Paul's gone into the Leinster Senior League. I mean, it must be very difficult for referees to officiate in some of those games. At the intermediate level, I think they have linesmen, but a little lower down, they're on their own. So they're going into these games with no linesmen. They have to make offside calls maybe 20 yards behind the play. Really difficult. And also, like, sometimes there's 40, 50 people at these games, and that can be intimidating. There's no barrier. There's no segregation or anything. And they can get on refs.
I believe they're finding it really hard in Leinster Senior League. It's sort of spread out. But Saturday, they're finding it really hard to get Saturday referees, because it's generally Saturday football in the lower divisions. And obviously, they're getting more disciplinary issues on the Saturday. So they're finding it really hard to get referees for Saturday football, because they tend to just not want to get involved, not want to be involved. In,
plus, it's not something you're going into for financial reasons either, Paul. Like, you know? So there has to be that love or that kind of...
Of course there is.
Keith, who was the best referee in England that you played in a match with?
We had Preston. I was playing for Preston against Burnley, and we got Howard Webb. He came down and refereed one of the games, and he was actually brilliant, because he was a little bit like Paul himself.
Did you give him as much abuse as you gave Paul?
I gave him. No, he was a bit bigger than Paul. He was too afraid. No, he was great. He would come over and he'd sit, like you say, listen, I thought that was a foul, and you would F and Jeff, and he'd say, calm down, keep your hands by your side, or I'll book you. And he would just commonsensical with you. He wouldn't tell you to go away and be quiet. He'd just talk to you, and he would always call you by your name. He'd say Keith, or he wouldn't say number 11, come here, it'd be Keith. And he had a great way of diffusing me. And I was a bit of an angry player when I played, so I'm sure I wasn't the easiest of people. But Howard was probably by far the best in England.
Him and Clattenburg, actually, two very nice guys.
I never had Clattenburg.
Easy going guys from working class areas. Actually, Alan Kelly and Clattenburg would be best of mates, I think.
Really, yeah.
I think Alan was groomsman for Clattenburg's, or the other way around, say, a wedding.
Both of them fancy each other. Fancy themselves, but, Alan Kelly.
No, I've met the two guys. They're good guys, yeah, easy going guys, you know. So,
well, Alan's gone on to great things, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has.
Alan was a brilliant ref, now I have to say.
And Paul, would you have found that managers in the league here would have respect for you, or were there certain managers that you fell out with over the years that wouldn't give you the time of day?
I think when I started off, there's no problem with names, but I remember Pats, there used to be, who was down there? It was obviously Pat Olin, and then you had Eamon Collins beside him, then you had another fella, Dave Mahidi. Like, I mean, it was crazy technical area to try and manage as a fourth official. Like, they were all played. I got on great with Eamon, actually, to be honest, but he was a nutter when he was in the technical area. And I think in them days then, if they got thrown out, they got, I think it was a 20 or 30 euro fine or something, so it didn't really bother them. They got a match on a 20 or 30 euro, so the discipline in the technical areas wasn't very good. And then they started putting in stricter fines, and I think generally now they're fairly well behaved. There's a few, obviously Finn Harps would always be a tough place to go to, but again,
it's just on the pitch again,
they have their cuts, but again, when you see them in the dressing room after, they're generally okay, and they don't tend to let it go on and on and on, you know, so it's left behind. So they, as a referee, you have to also, you know, realise that players have trained really, really hard all week. Coaches have put a hell of a lot of time into their tactics, into the way they feel. And if they get a bad call, which you're going to get bad calls, you have to realise that there's going to be anger, whatever. Is anger the wrong word? Or that they're going to lose their head a little bit at you. And you have to give a little bit there on that one, you know. So.
And what about fans? I mean, I mentioned them at the outset, because fans sometimes look at a referee and they see when the fixture list comes out and they say, let's say for argument's sake, yourself, I won't name another referee, and they say, Paul Chute, he gives us nothing.
Well, getting back to coaches, I've no doubt when people would see my name, I would say, they would say, we might be allowed a little bit of a tackle here, you know what I mean? Because I'd probably be a little bit old school and probably would have been there when the tackles were a bit heavier than is allowed now. It's sort of gone into a non-contact game, so I would have no doubt the coach would say, listen, we might be allowed a little bit more here. If you look at my card count, it's probably way down on some other referees, so I would say coaches might be telling their team, you know, don't be afraid to leave it in a tiny bit here today. Yeah. You know?
And yet, but the fans though as well.
Alan's laughing there. Yeah. Alan.
Well, that's one thing I felt last Sunday in the cup final. I thought Derek let a lot go, but for his benefit. Yeah. Because if you start carding fellas early on, you're only going kind of down the wrong road, because you're putting yourself under so much pressure. And maybe that's something, like, in terms of styles of refereeing, like how much, like obviously you have different coaches with different beliefs and all the different ways they want to play. Yeah. In terms of styles for a referee, like if you're going to a meeting, like as you say, Paul, you'll be chatting to them and say, well, I let things go, and what about you? I think you do too much, kind of clamping down. Or is there a balance to be met, or is it just a personal style amongst everyone?
There would be. There would be a balance. I know years ago there was a referee and he blew everything, you know what I mean? And I think he annoyed. Generally, nothing happened in his matches. He was always a safe referee, because any whiff of a free at all, he was blowing. And I would say his free kick count was huge, I'd say. And but there was no tempo in the matches. I won't say his name. But there was no tempo in the matches he was refereeing, and I think he sort of stifled the matches totally. There is a fine line, but you can't, obviously, you have to keep control. Control is the most important thing. If you lose control, obviously the players take control, and then someone's going to get hurt or whatever. So there is a fine line between letting it flow and knowing when to bring it back in. So I think most good referees would let the pattern of play, see what's going on. They should know when to jump in with a yellow, or if need be a red. Just on the back up what Alan said about Derek. Yeah, Derek, I thought it was excellent last week. He probably held back his cards at the start, and he read the game really, really well, and he's been waiting a long time for it, and always delighted.
You were one of the officials on the day. Yeah.
The guy behind the goal who looks to be doing nothing, but he is. I am calmed up to the ref. I didn't have any major calls. The penalty was my end, but I was out of view of mine. His back was to me. So what? So well, we are calmed up. We could have some big calls. I had a big call to make in the semi-final 2 years ago up in Derry. I gave a penalty to Dundalk, which was proven right. So even though, people think that you're doing nothing, you are actually playing a part in the game.
Yeah. I watched you as you left the pitch after the cup final, and you lingered for a bit. You had your photo taken, so you were feeling perhaps a little emotional that
day. Yeah, I was. Yeah, well, I bowed out as a referee up in Sligo there about 2 weeks ago. I got a nice, it was a nice game of football, and Derry and Sligo gave me a nice little mementos. So that was probably the main bow out. But yeah, of course, being in the Aviva, I've only been involved in the Aviva a few times. League of Ireland referees haven't really been involved in the Aviva too many times. Unless an intermediate cup or something, I would say it's probably my last time to be involved. Not on the pitch. I'll definitely be involved on the terraces or the stands. It was a bit of emotion, I have to say. Yeah, no doubt.
We're a long way off having VAR in this country, but what's your view on it?
Just getting back to cup finals, I know the VAR will be obviously the hardware cameras will be in place in the Aviva for the Euros next year, so it's a possibility they could be used in the FAI Cup final maybe going forward. I think we have to get more uniformity between, first of all, in England they have their own system of VAR, UEFA have their own system of VAR, FIFA seem to have their own system of VAR. We have to get uniformity on one system, and it still needs a lot of tweaking. Are we getting less bad calls? I was going to say more good calls, less incorrect calls. We are. Is it annoying people? It certainly is, especially in England, the time frame it's taking to make decisions. It seems to have worked a lot better in the World Cup and in the Champions League than it works in England. I think the referee going to the monitor seems probably the way to go. The weekend obviously we had the offside where the guy's foot, if he was already wearing size 12s, he was wearing size 8, he would have been onside. But it's one of those things, he's either on or he's off. I know it's terrible when you see a big toe plays a player offside, but that's the way it is. I would be more positive than the negative on VAR, but it still needs a lot of tweaking and it needs uniformity throughout the game. And as someone said there the weekend, they're finding it hard to celebrate a goal now because they're constantly watching, is there a VAR call on it? And so.
Keith, where are you on VAR, positive or negative at the moment?
Very negative. I like Man City, and obviously with the handball on the weekend, that wasn't given, and it goes from Liverpool being 1-0 up. It could have been a Man City penalty, but it was Liverpool 1-0 up, and that's a big thing because I think that would have deflated the Liverpool players because they had started like a house on fire. So if Man City had all of a sudden found themselves 1-0 up, I think the crowd would have been killed as well. So I think the 3-1 result would have been very, very different if that penalty had been given. And I think I'd say probably 60-70% of the people watching it were saying it's a penalty. Even Jamie Carragher said it was a penalty in the Sky studio. So yeah, we're still getting dodgy calls. Why not just leave the referee there and, we'd still have the whole emotion of it and wait till you get home to watch the replay like we used to? And that's the way I used to like it. And I think the League of Ireland is probably benefiting from it more. It's a better game to watch when VAR isn't there. When VAR isn't involved, I'd rather watch a game of football. So, yeah, like I say, I'll be playing next year in the League of Ireland and I'll be thankful that VAR won't be there.
Yeah, I think there's a referees meeting this week and they might tweak it. They don't allow the refs to review the decisions on the pitch side monitor. It goes, they have someone located elsewhere.
Stockley Park.
Yeah. Stockley Park. Yeah. And I think what that does, it looks like, you can imagine it's hard to overrule one of your colleagues, basically. They seem to be quite reluctant to do it. It takes a lot. It needs to be a real bad decision for them to do it. And what's happened is that there's inconsistencies and VAR was brought in to wipe away the inconsistencies. It's supposed to be the technology that gets these decisions right. And as an example, yesterday, the Alexander-Arnold handball, there's no real clarity over even how they came to that decision. I think the reason they gave in the end was that his hand wasn't in an unnatural position. But then you could pick out five other instances where they gave penalties for very similar instances. So it's confusing to people and very frustrating.
But that's one of the reasons it's not working in the UK, is that you're not hearing what the decision is. Nobody's telling you what the decision is. Like, for instance, leading up to that handball yesterday, there was a Man City handball before it. So has VAR decided there was an initial free kick for Man City. Let play go on. Let the play happen and forget about the Arnold handball. Or has it just looked at that handball? That's the thing. People don't know in the stadiums. They don't know. Mm-hmm. Don't know if the ref knows. I was speaking to Alan Kelly about this actually when he was over during the off season in the States, and they're doing a lot of training on it in the States. And he was the head of VAR for the under-21s championship final, was it?
Yeah, he was in the final. Yeah,
that's right. In Ukraine.
And he's gone to some other, I think, under-19 world somewhere. Yeah.
So they're training on it in the States. Every time they get a gap in the season, referees are brought in and they're shown it. And they're actually going, as he was saying, in the States, they're trying to test it out. That the VAR decision happens live on the Megatrons in the stadium. So the fans see what's happening at the exact same time as everybody else in the stadium. So the fans are more educated.
Similar to rugby, I presume.
Yeah. The fans are all more educated about what, and they can hear the referee talking, like the rugby.
There's a lot more transparency, certainly, in rugby when you hear them talking and they talk to each other.
And people know what's happening in the stadium. I think that happens, then people understand, okay, it's good for the game and we move on. But again, was it the goal yesterday or Saturday, a 3-minute gap?
Or three minutes 47 seconds
before the goal's given. That's
the Sheffield United one. But it's I was dead against it from the start. The only thing I wanted it in for really was anything that's black and white, which was obviously, as Paul said there, even though it's very pedantic, the one on Saturday, but if it's offside, it's offside. Anything where it's subjective, I didn't want it at all. And we're seeing the problems for that now, because you have a referee making a decision on the pitch. Michael Oliver yesterday, I think, is a brilliant referee, probably one of the best over there. But it's gone up to some other referee in the box, as Anthony was saying, in Stockley Park. And again, it's just his opinion. Mm-hmm. So it's coming back to the subjective stuff again. Like it's just could, and you could go around the ground and everyone's sitting in the ground. Everyone has a different opinion on it. So anywhere, and that's why I think the goal line technology has been fantastic, because it's black and white. Mm-hmm. And same with the offsides, even though they're getting, like, it's ridiculous to draw the lines and how pedantic it is. But I think you'll get more of them right, where the obvious ones with offside, where there is the gap, and it does need tweaks, but it's just so frustrating at the moment. And as Paul said also about the uniformity, like, how can you have one association using it one way and another association using it a different way? Whereas the reasons it worked so well in the World Cup, and it, for Anthony's point, and I would agree totally, is give the referee the opportunity to go over, because as we touched on in the initial conversation, mistakes are going to be made. That's only human nature, and that's fine. But if a mistake is made and the referee feels as though he has made one, or someone said you should look at this, give him the opportunity to go and look at it. And then if he feels I've made a mistake or I haven't, at least he's had a second chance to look. But if it's gone up to some other lad and he's deciding, like Martin Atkinson is a prime example. I think Martin Atkinson was a brilliant referee. He's had a disaster for the last month, and I think he's nearly questioning himself, and it's affecting his performances massively.
Definitely the time frame it's taking anyway to make the decisions has to be on. Even as a player, I'm sure it must be a pain in the ass hanging around on the pitch waiting for 2-3 minutes. Your memento is totally taken out of the game. So they will definitely have to sort that out. But it worked well in the World Cup, so I mean, and I there was no, it was very, a lot of positives on it in the World Cup, so I think why
works well in rugby, works well in the NFL, works well in even in soccer in Germany and stuff like that. It works really well, and so how they're getting it so wrong.
The only thing is, I know we talk about rugby and the NFL. The only thing is this football.
It's a totally
different game. Yeah. They're much stop start and they're stop starting all the time, you know. But then even in the Rugby World Cup final, I reckon, and there was no great highlight of it. I reckon it was a forward pass on the South African second last try, which changed the game. And they hadn't got the cameras in place to pick it out. Funny enough, I don't know if you remember it. Mm. So I still think it's a positive. I think we have to work really well in the World Cup, so I don't see why it shouldn't work well in general. Okay. But the time frame of making decisions will have to be shortened.
Paul, for you as a referee, high moments, highs and lows?
High, I suppose. It's funny, probably a high was a change for me in probably 87 minutes. I suppose the high was getting the refereeing the 2013 FAI Cup final in Aviva. Being there, being part of a great occasion. It was a great game of football between Sligo and Drogheda. That was the high. The low, I suppose, was making a mistake in the same game in your biggest stage. The game was going so well. It was totally in control, like Derek last week. Only problem for me is there was a substitution and I possibly switched off a little bit. I think it might have been what I always do. I was talking to a player and I switched off. There was a free kick to Sligo. The great Joseph Ndo put the ball down. I went back and I just had a whistle. I'd say it was about a fraction from my mouth, and the free kick was taken, clipped over the wall. Great goal. Drogheda. I still to this day feel that whether I'd blown the whistle or not would have made any difference, because I think Drogheda were in position as far as, well, that's not, that's, but as far as I was concerned, it was a great goal. So I realised then just after it that I'd made a mistake and I couldn't come back. I couldn't go back on it. So
How soon did you realise? Was it straight away?
No, it wasn't. No, it was took me a while then to realise, because the whole thing, and I didn't even, and I wasn't sure, and I'm not being smart, and I know the law is fairly well. I wasn't sure whether I had to blow the whistle in that situation. There's certain times you have to blow the whistle and others you don't. You don't have to blow the whistle for every free kick, but when there's a substitution made or you count out the 10 yards, you have to. So I didn't realise, to be honest. So it was a mistake on my part. And
when did you realise?
Just when I came in, really, to be honest, you know, so.
And Mick Cook was the manager of Drogheda at the time.
Cookie was, yeah, and I was good friends with Cookie, because Cookie was good friends with I only met him a few weeks ago there, actually, up in Stradbrook, because Mick would be good mates with Eamon Collins, and I'd be good mates with Eamon, because Eamon looked after me, lad Jack, and I would have been out, you know, I would have known him really well. And no, Mick was, he was a bit upset, but he accepted it and we just got on with it, and he doesn't hold it against me, I don't think. I was up in Drogheda, funny enough, I was up in Drogheda last day, 2 weeks ago, the Drogheda Cavintini match, and I was shouting for Cavintini, and one felt smart fell, he said, why aren't you shouting for Sligo? I just looked at turned around, there was a few words said, but no, it wasn't Tom.
But it must be hard after a big day like that and a big call
game.
How long did it take you to get over it?
It took me, well, I probably just there was another referee actually had a similar I'm definitely not going to name names in a cup final previous, and he never got over it, and he tried to get back refereeing, and he was never the same referee, and he ended up giving it up within a year. He made a number of mistakes in that final, and Alan's nodding his head and he knows who I'm talking about. Just get on with it, really, and be thick-skinned and realise that you did make a mistake, and everyone makes mistakes, and try and learn from it, make sure it doesn't happen again. Anytime I'm talking to younger referees, to make sure that they realise that the concentration for the 90 minutes plus, all the way from the minute you arrive to the minute you leave the ground, never feel that you have a match in your pocket until you're out of the ground. I put my mistake down to probably enjoying the occasion too much, to be honest. The centre stage, I felt I was enjoying it too much, and probably didn't concentrate when I should have been.
Yeah, that's a very honest appraisal, isn't it,
Al? Yeah, well, I admire him for being so open and honest, because I think I defended you at the time. We were on. I think I was sitting with you, Adrian. Yeah. We could have been doing the commentary, but the following night in Soccer Republic, I'm not saying it was the bias, but Sligo Rovers, we were chuffed.
That was some great goal.
And it was a great goal. And we were, as you said, the argument I was making for it was, once the ball goes dead, the players should be able to get themselves sorted and react. And it was a clever part of thinking on Joseph's behalf, and because he's so creative in that regard, it was a piece of brilliance by Joseph, flicks it over the wall, and obviously the great goal then, I think it was Danny that scored.
Well, it wasn't as if I was counting it out and they took the free kick, like
they were in place,
but that still wasn't,
and players, that's another thing as well, Paul, players will always look for an excuse, so they're quick to blame you as well for you to openly admit it and be honest about it as well. But I would defend you on that one, I have to say. And I'd be quick to criticise for no problem, but I would defend you on that one.
Okay, all right. Let's move it along. We mentioned the senior team, big game for them, of course, next week against Denmark. And before that, New Zealand on Thursday. That game will be live on RT2 Television and on RT Radio 1 Extra. Also a big game this week, Alan, for the under-21s, Stephen Kenny's under-21s. In fact, they have a double assignment coming up, away to Armenia, first of all, on Thursday, and then Sweden here at home on Tuesday. They're nicely positioned, top of the table at the moment, with still some big games to come.
Big games, yeah. And I spoke to actually one of Stephen's staff on Saturday. His young fella actually plays football at my young fella out in Portmarnock, Damien. And he was a bit deflated in regards of, obviously, there's such hype around the 21s now, as we all know. Brilliant team, they've had a great start to the campaign, but as James mentioned earlier, the amount of injuries they have now, and obviously the two players called up, which is a good thing, I suppose, for the greater good of the game. But from a selfish point of view, in Stephen's part, I'm sure absolutely all he wants to do is get us qualified for the major tournament that we have never done at under 21 level. So they're a little bit disappointed with that, and he says, look, it happens in football, but for whatever reason, all these injuries have kind of come at once as well. The lad Malumbi is suspended as well, and he's a huge loss, because I actually think there's an argument that he could have been called up for the game against New Zealand, because he's in my opinion,
it's a funny one, isn't it?
That in my opinion, out of all the lads I've watched with the 21s and all the talk about Parrott and Connolly and all these, I think Malumbi has the best chance. I think he's a unbelievable talent,
especially the position he plays.
Absolutely, where we're struggling in midfield, as Keith mentioned earlier, about you're still relying on Glenn Whelan. No disrespect to Glenn, but the likes of young Malumbi coming in, why not throw him in, like, in the game against New Zealand? So that's an interesting one. But just from Stephen's point of view, with the brilliant start of the campaign, they're a bit deflated about the injuries, but they'll just have to get on with it. I think the travel arrangements as well should be mentioned, that they're going to have to take 5 or 6 flights for the Armenia game. I'm sure Stephen's not too pleased about that either, but they'll just have to get on with it and deal with it.
Yeah, I'll tell you a story. When Don Givens was doing a 21s manager, and I was actually told after that I'd never play for Ireland again by Don himself, and he rang me and we were playing, the fax came through with the Blackburn, we were playing Lithuania away in a friendly, and Sam Allardyce had told me that I was going to play against Liverpool on the 100th anniversary of the Hillsborough disaster, so it was in Anfield. So like, same again, there was like four or five flights before we got to Lithuania, so I was struggling with a back injury. So I rang Don directly and said, listen, I've been playing for Ireland since I'm 15, you know what you're getting from me, you don't need to see me in a game against Lithuania, that's a friendly, I'm going to be playing against Liverpool next week, I'd rather stay here than get my tactics right and blah blah blah. So he, on the phone, he was nice as pie, he said, yeah, no problem, Grant, never picked me again, told me, yeah, you won't be playing for Ireland. It got to the point where I went on loan to Sheffield United, and he rang me and asked me to come back into the squad, but I'd be coming back in not as the captain, but I refused, and that's when he told me, yeah, listen, I'll be telling Giovanni all about you and you won't be getting into the team. And 3 months later, Giovanni picked me for the first team.
Another big game, James, this week, the Women's International. It's live on RT2 television on Tuesday, away to Greece. Doing very nicely indeed, Viripo. They had that narrow win over Ukraine. They were 2-0 up last time out. They've beaten Montenegro already, so it's been a very good start. But away to Greece is going to be a sticky enough one, because they had a very good win away to Montenegro last week.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for the girls. Like, the weather there should be just about coming down to nice kind of weather, not too hot, not too humid. And I think Vera's done a great job, in fairness. She's picked her squad. The players she has in the squad are all doing really, really well. Amber Barrett is obviously going away with them as well, having just completed her degree, so she's already on a buzz from that point of view as well. Rhianna Jarrett, as we mentioned her last week, had a great cup final last weekend, so she's flying as well. So I think it's going to be a tough test for them. I think if they start the game like they did against Ukraine, I think they could get a couple of goals early and then that'll be them happy. But they've got tough games ahead of them, really, really tough games ahead of them, and every point they can get away from home is a bonus point, and then try and pick up the points they need at home here. But yeah, it's tough. It's just really, really tough. The level of football that some of our girls are playing at is now very, very high level. Like some of them at West Ham, Liverpool, Arsenal, Man City. Obviously, Megan is out through concussion, I think it is, why she's not travelling to this game. But there's a good squad of players there, and I think if they play to what they're capable of on the day, they should get a good result.
Yeah. Germany, obviously Ireland are perhaps, well, in fact, Viripo has pretty much conceded. Ireland are playing for second position in the group, because Germany, as we saw at the weekend, they beat England in a friendly at Wembley. They're going to coast to qualification. So Ireland battling Ireland for second spot.
Yeah, and I think the girls are fully aware of that, as is the manager, as you said, Adrian. So, but I think if you were to go back through all the qualifying campaigns so far, normally in the group, there's obviously a top seed and then there's second place, and Ireland always find it difficult because it's almost like we're fighting for third, fourth. Whereas if you look at the campaign so far, Ukraine we're seeing as the second seeds in that group, and we've already beaten them at home. So the girls feel as though they're in with a real strong, realistic chance of qualification through the runner-up system or the playoff system. So they have a huge opportunity, and I think Vera, to be fair to her, I know she's only was in for one game so far, but there's a real likability about her, like, and she seems to have taken to it very well. And obviously the momentum that's behind the women's game now, and it would be a fantastic achievement for them to qualify, because I think in terms of trying to develop the game, from that point of view, if they were to qualify from a major tournament, that would be serious going for them. So hopefully, I'm covering the game myself tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to it, Jack, because they have built up real momentum so far in the group.
Okay, the PFA Ireland Awards took place at the weekend. Last week on the podcast, Alan, you went for Sean Gannon. I went for Michael Duffy as my player of the year.
What do we know, Adrian?
Yeah, James, of course James went for Jack Byrne. Who would you have gone for, Keith, if you were on the podcast last week as
player of the year in Ireland?
I've to be honest, I've liked Jack Bourne as well. I think he's been neat and tidy with what he's done for Rovers this year. He's on the whole, he's controlled most of the games. He's come up with his delivery is brilliant, and what he's done for Ireland over the last couple of games has been brilliant. And to do that from being at Rovers, coming in and demanding the ball, it's a big thing to have to do that to players who will be earning thousands and thousands of pounds a week. So fair play to him, and I hope he keeps going. I hope he keeps getting picked for the Irish team.
Yeah, hopefully he has a big game on Thursday. You'd have gone for Jack Bourne, I'm sure, Anthony. You'd have got it right as well.
I love Jack Bourne. There's just a bit of swagger about him as well. I thought Chris Shields maybe should have been in the conversation. He's just so consistent playing, and he's so important to the best team in the country. You know, I think his absence in the FAI Cup final was a big factor. But yeah, I think Jack Bourne, just as I said, there's just a bit of X factor about him. You know, he's a lovely player to watch, and he's been good for the league.
Paul, you've retired now, so you're quite entitled to offer a view.
I suppose. Well, Sean Gannon, I would say, is for consistency. You won't get a better, more consistent fullback. Excellent player. Always does the simple thing, but seems to do it so well. But I'll have to agree with the lads. I'd say Jack Bourne. Any time I've refereed Rovers and he's on the pitch, it's great to watch him. Seems to make space for himself, and the little balls in behind and the back, and excellent in cross field balls. I'd love, really, really like to see him doing well on Thursday against New Zealand. I would say he's going to play, obviously, against New Zealand. He won't start, obviously, against Denmark, but he possibly could be used as a substitute, possibly, if he does the business on Thursday. And I think he can. I think it's his chance now. It's probably his game of the season is Thursday, even though it's end of season. So I think he's got to grab his chance and show what he can do on Thursday.
And Alan, Danny Mandrew of Bowes, you're a big fan. He got the Young Player of the Year award.
Yeah, no surprise there. I'm mad about this lad, yeah. And I suppose you're looking at lads who can eventually, you're predicting who can go on to further afield. I think Mandrew has a great chance out of all the lads playing in the league at the moment. He's brilliant to watch. He's so dynamic. He has this kind of gracefulness about him as well. You think of the goals he got against Shamrock Rovers. And yeah, I see a big future ahead for him, and obviously part of Stephen Kenny's under-21s as well. Is there much chance for you, Paul, to allow yourself to kind of watch the likes of Jack Bourne and Mandrew
I can never say his name correct, Danny Mandrew. Yeah, excellent player. But someone has to talk to him. I feel that sometimes in matches that when things aren't going his way, or the match, yeah, he loses the head and he loses the concentration. And I've seen him in games that he's been, if he can put in nasty enough tackles and just doesn't seem to be the flair player that he can be when things are going his way. So I think someone needs to just have a chat with him that it's not always going to go your way. And
Keith Tracy could have a word, could he?
He possibly could.
I don't think anybody wants to be on that morning wing just yet.
James, the First Division Player of the Year, because you watch a heck of a lot of football and you're very much across the First Division. I honestly didn't see too much of Rob Manley for Cabinteely this year, but 17 league goals.
Absolute rage, and he didn't play in the last game. He couldn't play in the last game against Ronan. He could well have changed the game. He's a quality player. Absolutely. When the ball's at his feet, he can do whatever he wants. He scores goals for fun. He did score in the first leg, I think, didn't he? No, he didn't.
Missed a sitter.
I know.
Waters missed.
There's a Premier Division team in for him. I won't say who it is. I know who it is, because I know Jack was telling me that yeah, he has to sort out a few things with college, but there's a...
Yeah, another person who's just got his degree. Yeah. So he's happy out as well. He graduated during the week as well. So graduation one day. I think he graduated Wednesday.
Yeah.
Picked up the award Friday night. So overall, a very good season. Very good season, not just for him, but for Cabinteely in general.
Brilliant.
Absolutely phenomenal season for them to push Strada to where they did. And then, obviously, it's just a difference in squads to push Strada over that line. But a great season for Cabinteely and Rob.
Anthony, Vinnie Perth got the Coach of the Year, or Manager of the Year, as it was called. Stiff enough competition in there as well, because I know James last week was making a strong case for Keith Long from Bohemians, given what he achieved on a shoestring budget. But in his first year in charge for Vinnie Perth, to win the double, albeit they missed out on that elusive treble, but he got the nod.
Yeah, I mean, look, when he took over, there was only one way to go. He took over double winners, you could only go down, and that brings a lot of pressure. You know, he obviously inherited a very good squad, but I think he's made that job look easier than it was. You know, just to keep that continuity, maintain the hunger in the squad, very close to winning a domestic treble, might still win a third trophy tonight. But yeah, he's done a really excellent job there, Vinnie Perth. You know, the players seem happy under him, and as I said, he kept them at that level, which is very difficult to do. I mean, it's one thing getting to them heights, but to stay there is very difficult because you're the team to be shot at every week. And I think he deserved it.
Yeah, and the First Division Manager of the Year draw is Tim Clancy. Denise O'Sullivan won the Women's Senior International Player of the Year. As we mentioned, Michelle O'Neill a little earlier, congratulations to her. She picked up the Premier Division Referee of the Year, and the First Division Award went to Alan Patchell. And Keith, the Irish Overseas Player of the Year went to Enda Stevens. That was an interesting choice. I mean, a lot of people would talk about Shane Duffy, but Stevens has been excellent. You mentioned, you know, your time at Sheffield United, but his deliveries are superb.
Yeah, Enda's a great player. He's saying, I know I said he wasn't proven international. That's just because of the amount of caps he has at the minute. You know, I don't think I was a proven international player. I have only 6 caps, so I don't think you can call yourself proven until you go over the 30, 40, even 50 mark. But yeah, he's had a great season at Sheffield United. The way they defend and the way they attack on the front foot is brilliant. And whenever Sheffield United do get a game on the telly, I love watching them. You know, obviously you keep abreast of all the Irish players, but he's been really good, and his delivery is brilliant. And he's been a breath of fresh air at left back, because when Stephen Ward started to dry up and you weren't really sure who was going to go back there. But yeah, he's been really good, and you know, long may it continue.
Okay, listen lads, we'll wrap it up there. But before we do, you're not expecting this, this day week, that's next Monday night, we'll have live coverage on Game On of the big game against Denmark. Of course, it's also on RT2 television, and we'll have the podcast immediately after the full time whistle. So Keith, prediction for Ireland-Denmark.
Oh God. I'll be nice and say 2-0 to Denmark.
Ooh.
That's nice.
That's nice. Believe me, that's nice. Well, honestly, if we bring it back to the tactics, if Mick tries to play the long ball like he usually does, the defenders are just going to mop it up, because we're only going to play one up front. So they'll mop it up. We're just going to be under pressure. And if we try to keep the ball and take the sting out again, they will nick it, because we're not good enough to keep it at the back. So they will nick it and just go straight through to the heart of us. So stick or twist, 2-0, 5-0, I don't know. We're going to lose it.
Alan.
Well, my heart says obviously I want them to see them getting through, but my head says I'm not so sure, to be honest with you, Adrian. It's hard to fancy them, because based on, as I said earlier, like you look at the pattern of the games, and we're a poor outfit. We really are, you know.
Scoreline time, Alan.
1-0 to Denmark.
James?
I'm going to be quite positive here. I think we're going to score. I think we will score, but unfortunately I think we'll lose 3-1. I think if you just look at why I put it down, this is the Swiss goal that was scored against us in Lansdowne Road not so long ago, where they absolutely carried over the heart of the defence and nobody followed runners and they easily scored. I think that's going to happen at least once or twice, maybe 3 times.
Mr. Pine?
I think we'll give it a decent goal, but we just won't be quite good enough, so I'll say 1-1.
Which is what I would say as well. And the final word to our special guest today, former League of Ireland referee Paul Chute.
I'm going to leave my head outside the studio and I'm going to go with my heart and I'm going to go 1-0 for Ireland.
Yeah! Roll on the Aviva next Monday. Until then, bye-bye.